Broken Circles by Kit Brightside. Chapter 28. Vipere eyes the holes in his jee critically. The cut was clean, 3 inches in length, and stiff due to the dried blood crusting into the fabric. "It's still flexible," the little bird, Jay, pipes up. "My mom used to patch up my clothes all the time." "Before or after you wash out the blood?" he questions. "I'm not so sure. I've never gotten my clothes so bloody." He can hear the curiosity in the Blue Jay's voice, echoed as it is. "Speaking of, just why was it that I got stabbed?" "You got stabbed because your reflexes are poor," Vipere says, simply, smiling at the agitation he can feel coming from the other. He was like a book, so easily read one might think it was written for a child. "My lord," Cryptor calls out questioningly. Vipere sets the ruined G aside and turns to the golem. "We obtained the golden armor, just as you commanded." "You were after the golden armor?" "Good," he says calmly, ignoring the little bird's question. "I knew you wouldn't fail me." "Of course." The golem puffs out his chest a bit at the other's words. "What are you even going to do with it?" the little bird scoffs. "It pretty much incinerates everything it touches. Anything alive, at least." "It has a power no mortal can wield, yes," he says, if only to quell the little bird's curiosity and gain a moment of silence. "But I'm no mortal." Cryptor gives his lord a confused look. "Yeah, but you're currently in my body, and I'm definitely immortal." "You truly have no understanding of yourself, do you?" He sighs dramatically. "I'm sorry," the Nindroid replies, mistaking Vipere's words as being for him. "Where is the armor currently?" Vipere changes the subject, not wanting to go through the hassle of explaining everything to a mere golem. "Right this way." The Nindroid snaps back to attention, swiftly turning on heel and leading the way to the armor. The armor, previously having been modeled for a being much bigger along with a giant mech, didn't have a single piece in size for any normal person to wear. "We've already begun preparations for smelting into something more malleable." "That won't be necessary," he waves the other off, quickly moving forward. "Tell them to cease immediately. There's no point wasting time and effort on something pointless." "Yes, my lord." "Aw," the other says sympathetically. "You hurt his feelings." "That is impossible," he says almost idly to the little bird as he approaches the armor. "Golems do not have feelings." "He isn't a golem, he's a Nindroid." He can practically feel the other roll his eyes. "Of course he has feelings." The poor child was delusional. No doubt his master hadn't taught him anything about golem. Maybe even encouraged this kind of thought, due to the golem they work with closely. He'd teach the boy about it himself, later. After Ninjago was under his control. Assuming the child didn't fall back asleep before then. But for now, he had to focus. The spell wasn't exactly hard, on a small scale with normal metal. But on a large scale with such powerful metal, it became a lot more finicky. "Hopefully the little bird will stay quiet long enough for me to do this." First, he calls to mind the symbols, the frequencies at which each thread hums, each one a piece that can be manipulated into his desires should he just know how to shift the pitch. This note goes down, this one goes up, and it's all unraveling in his hands, from a solid to a liquid that's spreading over the floor. A shift in tempo, and the liquid moves as he commands. It condenses, snaking around and over itself, until finally... whoa! It's done. He experimentally twirls the staff in his hands. It's different than before, much more ornate, with a decorative piece at each end. This was more than the mega weapon. It was more powerful, and he could only guess as to why that was. The power in it thrummed through his hands, singing a delicious tune that could drive lesser men mad, like a siren asking for its next victim. "Today, he says to the few followers who had gathered to watch the proceedings. You lucky few have witnessed the creation of the Ultra Weapon. This? Jay is quiet, sounding almost perturbed. What is this? You can feel it? He can't help but smile, wide at that. The little bird had potential. My lord? Pythor speaks up, quickly getting a hold of his awe to speak. What now? He stops to think it over for a moment. He could move forward with his plans at this moment, but there was one last piece he wanted, a piece that was being stubborn. Perhaps another route would be better. We have a little detour to make. Zane looked at all the others, all gathered and waiting to hear what he and Echo had found in the information that Jay's uncle had given them. Well, Kai demanded impatiently, did you figure out how to get rid of that guy without killing Jay? Yes and no, Zane grits his teeth. You see, we looked into quantum entanglement and, well, when you quantum entangle something, they merge, like what happened with Jay and Vipere. But when you detangle them, they continue to influence each other. So what? Lloyd's brows pinch as he tries to think it over. Does that mean that Jay'll be fine if we separate him from Vipere? Probably. Probably? Cole raises an eyebrow at the titanium nindroid. I'd rather not risk my best friend's life on probably. Neither would I, Zane assures the Master of Earth. And as much as I'd like to say that we have a solution, we don't even have any idea how we would go about untangling their souls. So, we're basically no better off than before, Kai surmises. Zane tries not to sigh, but he takes a deep breath in and... Was this really for the best? He turns to the thief, the only other one of their group who was awake. I mean, splitting off half of Ninjago. You don't think purifying the land of all its darkness was a good thing? Honestly, I don't. Not when it caused the death of an untold number of people. Good. The thief looks away from the miles of ocean that now separate the two masses of land, and meets his eyes. The firelight from their camp only barely lights his face enough to read his expression. Because I've been wondering, just who's right in this? What do you mean? The Overlord, and now our great Lord Bai Garmadon, have committed horrible atrocities. Both of them want to control Ninjago. The thief glances back at the camp, probably checking to make sure the others were still sleeping and couldn't overhear his words. They were almost undyingly loyal to Lord Garmadon. Is there even a right side to this? Or are we just splitting hairs now? Has your witch's gaze given you any insight into this? I'm afraid my visions are always straightforward. Many I don't even understand until the event has already come and passed. He hesitates. He wasn't sure how much he should say about his visions. But, even if we are splitting hairs now, I believe this is the lesser of the two evils. I see. The thief chuckles humorlessly. I suppose I shouldn't complain. It's not like I've ever been on the moral high ground. The world blurs for a moment as someone shakes him rather violently. What? Thankfully, they stop when Zane shows signs of acknowledgement. He meets Lloyd's worried green eyes blankly, and then, apologetically, I'm sorry. I'm fine now. The green ninja backs up a little bit to give the titanium nindroid some room, looking unconvinced. Right. Anyway, I just wanted to update you on our findings. We should get back to... Actually, Cole interrupts, a worried look on his face. I think now would be a good time to break for dinner. Yes, Echo readily agrees. It has gotten close to the time that most people typically eat dinner. All right. Zane can't deny his friends and brother. Not when they all look so worried for him. Dinner first, and then we will get back to researching. They all happily filed out of the room to head into the kitchen and debate over who was going to make what for dinner, as this was usually Jay's night to cook. Well, all were happy except for Kai, who ended up slipping on some ice that Zane had accidentally left, causing the fire ninja to fume on his way out. "I'm bored," Jay whines. Honestly, having to sit back and watch someone else's life got boring after a while, especially when that person was currently traveling on a boat with very little to do. "So you've said," Heiko's replies, sounding a little bit irritated. "If you went back to sleep, boredom wouldn't be a problem anymore, you know?" "No," he replies, stubbornly. "Where are we going, anyway? I thought you wanted to take over Ninjago." "I will, in time. I just have some things to take care of first." "Something that involves going to the Dark Island?" "I thought you didn't know where we were going?" "I guessed." Jay shrugs, mentally, since he couldn't get control back of his body to do it physically. "So, what's on the Dark Island that you want anyway? More of that dark matter that's all over the place there?" "I suppose there isn't anything wrong with telling you," Heiko says thoughtfully. "You see, there's someone who I want on my side, but he's very willful, and despite my offering him a very good deal, it seems it wasn't sweet enough to tempt him." "Okay, so, something on the Dark Island is going to convince this person to join you, somehow?" "Someone, yes." "My lord," Cryptor says from the doorway to the captain's room. "Yes?" The ninjroid steps in, closing the door behind himself, and then quickly says, "Some of the others are getting worried about you." "Worried?" Heiko sits a little straighter, folds his hand under his chin, and sweetly asks, "And why would they be worried? You've been talking to yourself ever since we got the golden armor." "Oh, they think you're crazy," Jay can't help but laugh before thoughtfully saying, "Well, I guess you are talking to a voice in your head." "Assure them that there is nothing to worry about," Heiko says, ignoring Jay. "And I haven't been talking to myself." "Who have you been talking to, my lord?" Cryptor asks cautiously. "Oh, just a little birdie, that's all," he assures the other, almost teasingly. "You know, he's probably going to assume you really are talking about a real bird," Jay says nonchalantly. After all, Zane had a bit of trouble with sarcasm and metaphors at first, too. "It isn't important," Heiko says with a huff. "Yes, my lord." Cryptor bows before quickly leaving. "Well, that was fun while it lasted." "Don't tell me you're bored again already. It's barely even been 2 seconds. "I'm bored." "If this is how you plan to wear me down so you can take back control, I can tell you already that won't be successful." "Isn't there anything interesting you could do, at least?" Jay whines. "This trip is going to take some time. I suggest you figure out a way to entertain yourself if you don't want to be bored the entire time." "Fine. What was the most annoying thing he could do?" "So, you used to be a scientist, right?" "Perhaps I should rephrase my earlier sentence, since it wasn't clear enough," Heiko says with a sigh. "Find a way to entertain yourself on your own, without me." "That was a hypothetical question, anyway," Jay says, airily. "I already know you were one. So, my real question is, what did you do?" There's a long silence, and Jay starts to think up things to guess, but then Heiko speaks up. "I worked mainly in 2 fields, quantum mechanics and genetic engineering." "Those are pretty different fields," Jay hums. Heiko doesn't say anything in response. "Which one did you like better?" "I didn't like either one." "So why did you enter those fields?" Jay suspected the answer. He'd seen enough snippets of memory to piece together an answer, but it seemed more polite to ask, if that made any sense, given neither of them had respect for any sort of personal boundaries up till now, what with the possession and pursual of the other's memories. Heiko is quiet for a long moment. Jay can feel the tension in the air, can feel the distant emotions welling up, so confusing and muddled they can't make heads or tails of it. And then Heiko's voice breaks the heavy silence. Want to see something interesting? It's obvious what he's attempting to do. He wants to distract Jay, to move away from the subject of his past. Jay wants to keep pushing, but there's a small radiating chill in his chest. The little snowflake that he thinks is telling him to let it go, so he does. What is it? Coal, Zane says, softly, so as not to startle the other while he's pouring himself a mug of coffee. Hey. Coal glances up at the nindroid quickly before finishing pouring and putting the coffee pot back. What's up? I was wondering about something, and I was hoping you could help to clear it up for me. Sure, what is it? Coal begins to pour sugar and cream in his coffee. Well, Alphonse spent years researching quantum entanglement. No doubt he would have known about the effects, that detangling them wouldn't necessarily kill Jay. So why didn't he say anything about it? What would have compelled him to lie about it instead? That's hard to say. Cole takes an experimental sip of his coffee, and then pours some more creamer and sugar in it. You're sure he knew? Yes. It was in the materials that he gave us, and I doubt they somehow overlooked something so important. Maybe he knew, but since it wasn't a guarantee, he wrote it off as undoable. Cole took another sip, this time seeming satisfied with the coffee. Or maybe he overlooked it. He didn't seem all that crazy, but who knows? After all this time, the guilt could have driven him bonkers, and he ended up missing something right in front of his nose. There was a long moment of silence as Zane thought Cole's words over. I still do not think he was unaware. Okay, Cole shrugs. But there's no way for us to know without asking him directly. You are right, Zane says slowly. Thank you for your assistance. No problem, Cole says easily. If there's anything else you want help with, don't hesitate to ask. Of course. With that, Zane returned to his research. Nia tailed after Ronan and Echo, careful not to be seen by the pair. She trusted Ronan, unlike the others, so it was purely curiosity that motivated her to follow the two as they snuck off the ship so late at night. Echo doesn't seem any fonder of Ronan than the others, so what are they up to? If only she were closer, then she could hear what they were talking about. But if I get any closer, Echo will probably be able to hear me, if his senses are as good as Zane's. So she had to settle for watching them for now. They turn the corner and she counts down the seconds in her head before it's safe for her to turn the corner. And when she does, she comes face to face with Ronan, who's leaning on the wall. Fancy running into you here, he starts off casually. Care to explain why you're following me? I believe it would be more accurate to say she was following us, Echo interjects, getting a flat look from the criminal in return. How do you know I was following you? She'd been so careful, there was no way he could have known. I've had plenty of dissatisfied customers decide to follow me home in an attempt to ambush me. Ronan pushes off the wall and crosses his arms. Now, why were you following us? He throws the nindroid a look over his shoulder as he says the last word. Echo just looks back, completely innocently, and gives the other a thumbs up. Ronan, of course, rolls his eyes at the other. I just want to know what you two were up to. She crosses her own arms in a mimic of the other's stance. Ronan looks over at Echo again, who shifts uncomfortably, and then back at her. Sorry, Nia, I'm afraid that's a secret. She glances between the two of them. Neither seem like they're going to speak. I'm not going back to the ship, she says determinedly. So, you can either tell me what we're doing now, or you can tell me what we're doing when we get to wherever we're going. Again, Ronan looks over at Echo, who ends up shrugging, looking a little unsure of himself. Nia had no idea what was up with them, but she was going to find out one way or another. All right, Ronan shrugs, and the two begin to walk again. Nia hurries to follow along. They were being silent for now, but even if she had to wait until they got where they were going, She'd find out what they were up to. What a night for a walk, she says, after the silence stretches on for a while. What do you mean? Echo asks, curiously. It's just cold, that's all. It does not feel that cold to me. Yeah, that's because you're a walking heater, Ronan says, snarkily. There's a beat of silence, so he goes on. What? No, I'm not a heater. Well, my systems were designed to maintain the optimal operating temperature, so in a sense, you are not wrong. Huh. Well, all right, then. That seemed to have taken the wind from his sails. Oh, and we're almost there, so you won't have to put up with the cold much longer. Good. Nia much preferred warmer temperatures. Maybe it had something to do with growing up in a blacksmith shop, where their house was almost always sweltering thanks to the smelter. Or maybe it had something to do with being related to the Master of Fire. Either way, she'd be thankful when they were back inside and warm. They entered what appeared to be a pawn shop of some sort. Ronan, not wasting any time, walked right up to the counter. Can I help you? The cashier asks dully, obviously bored. What terrible customer service. Yeah, I talked with you on the phone earlier, Ronan says ambiguously. The man looks at the criminal, then at Echo and Nia. It's all right, there with me. I've got what you're looking for, the man says, leaning forward on the counter, obviously sizing Ronan up. Assuming you've got the cash. I wouldn't be here if I didn't. Ronan leans on the counter too, meeting the other's gaze squarely. Now, are we going to do business, or am I going to have to take my money elsewhere? After a moment of silence, the man stands up and comes out from behind the counter. He quickly flips the shop sign to closed, and then heads over to a back room. There's a small table set up here with a single bulb lighting up the room hanging from the ceiling. It's like something right out of a movie, and Nia starts to wonder just what Ronan had been dragging Echo into. Whatever it is, Zane isn't going to be happy if he finds out. The man pulls out a small locked box, sets it on the table, unlocks and opens it, and then turns around to face the small group. Inside were a bunch of softly glowing gems. Are those? Nia starts with a gasp, only to be cut off by Ronan. Soul stones. Only the best, the merchant adds. They're all cut or broken, Ronan says, eyeing them critically. He picks one up, a light shade of teal, almost appearing cyan. Not what I'd call the best. This is what you wanted, isn't it? The merchant says with a frown. You specifically asked if I had any broken or cut soul stones. I did, Ronan says in a placating tone. He sets the piece of soul stone down and picks up another one similar in color. But I'm also not some fool who buys damaged goods wholesale. I see, the merchant says skeptically. So you're looking to get some valuable goods cheap? I'm not going to shortchange you, don't worry. He sets the piece aside and picks up another to exam. Of course, that's assuming you even have something I want. Ronan? Nia stops as soon as Ronan meets her eyes. There is a subtle, stay quiet, written on his face, and she finds herself tensing up, ready for anything. Is this all you have? Ronan asks, gesturing with a piece he just picked up. Soulstone doesn't grow on trees, you know. Of course this is all I have. Ronan seems to study the other man's face for a moment, and then he sets the piece he's holding down and shuts the lid. Tell me who else you've sold soulstones to. And why would I do that? Because I can make it worth your time, and no one will ever know it was you who gave me the information. You don't have enough money to pay for that kind of information. The merchant scoffs. I'm not paying in money. He snaps his fingers, which causes Echo to step forward and hand him a bag. The contents clinked and clanked noisily as he dumped it onto the table. It was full of various soul stones, each one appearing broken or cut like the ones the merchant had. I'll trade you all of these in exchange for the information. The merchant puts on a show of considering the offer, studying Ronan's face, studying one of the Soulstone fragments, and even studying Echo and Nia before finally holding out his hand. You've got a deal. The man gave him some addresses, names, numbers, basically everything he had on who he sold Soulstone to. Ronan let the man sweep all the Soulstones into his box, and then the three of them left. Nia waiting until they were well out of sight of the shop before she says, "Okay, what was that?" She rounds on the other two. Ronan gives her a look and says, "A business deal." "Yeah, I get that," she huffs. "What I meant is, why the heck are you looking into all this? What's the point? And where do you get those other soul stones anyway?" "Listen, I'd love to explain everything to you, really, I would, but my client has asked me to keep this all hush hush." "Who is your client anyway?" Nia demands. Echo shifts, catching her attention, and she almost feels stupid for having to ask. "Echo? What would the Nindroid even want with soul stones? Why would he need Ronan's help to get them? Why even keep it a secret?" Ronan looks over at Echo and shrugs. She's pretty good at figuring things out. "I guess it is all right if you know, so long as you promise not to tell anyone else." "I'm not promising anything until after I know what I'm promising to keep secret. If it turned out that Soulstone was like drugs or something for Nindroids and she helped keep this a secret, she would never be able to live it down." "I think that's the best you're gonna get from her," Ronan says. "So, what'll it be?" Echo seemed to think it over for a long time before finally nodding. "I hope Brother can forgive me for breaking his trust like this." Jay, if he could, would bite his lip in anxious anticipation. It was getting late, very late, so Hyakos would have to go to sleep soon. Jay wasn't sure what would happen then, if the other's guard would lower enough for him to take back control, or if the other could somehow magically maintain that while sleeping. "So, shouldn't you go to bed soon?" It wasn't like there was a lot on the ship for him to do, anyway. "You seem anxious." Hyakos hums thoughtfully. "I hope you're not plotting anything." "What? Of course not." Jay laughs nervously. "Of course not," Hyakos repeats sweetly. "As for your question, no, I have no intention of sleeping any time soon." "You know that's bad for you, right?" Jay tries to say nonchalantly. "I hear it can mess with your head, impair your judgment, and all that." "Duly noted." "All right, so maybe Jay would be in for a bit of a wait then." "Fine." He'd just keep bothering Hyakos until the other decided to go to bed, which hopefully wouldn't be long. Hopefully. Broken Circles by Kit Brightside. Chapter 29. We need more information. This was the conclusion Zane had come to after days and nights of studying the materials that Jay's uncle, Alphonse, had given them. None of them said what the man had done to entangle Jay's soul with the shard of Vipere's soul. If we knew what he did, exactly, then maybe we would be able to figure out a way to reverse it. The problem with that, though, was the little matter of the man being officially dead. They weren't going to be able to just look him up in the phone book in order to call him up and ask for more info. "Maybe I can be of assistance?" Pixel appears on the main monitor of the bridge. "Pixel," Zane says happily, "have you finished what you were working on?" "I have." Pixel had taken the downtime as a chance to upgrade herself, moving from Zane systems to the bounties. While it meant she would be mostly absent while she worked on the coding, Zane was happy for her. He didn't mind her being in his head, but she deserved to have a life of her own, to be able to interact with people aside from him, and become whatever person she wanted to be. She'd chosen this route over building a new body for reasons she didn't divulge to him. "The only thing left is for everyone to download the app from the emails I sent out." "I am sure they will as soon as they can," Zane assures her while pulling out his own phone to download the app. Pixel still had wireless access to his systems directly, so there wasn't any need for him to have the app that allowed her to communicate with them wherever they were that had service, especially since his systems were much stronger than any cell reception. That being said, it was a nice show of support for his friend. If need be, I can tell them about the emails. He knew that the others didn't always stay on top of their messages. Their sensei was especially bad with technology. It had taken a lot of convincing to get them to get their own cell phones, and they rarely used them to the point they barely had to charge them more than twice a week, if that. And Jay would practically walk around with a charger in his mouth to keep his charge with how often he used it. Zane? Pixel's worried voice breaks in from his thoughts. Are you alright? I am not, he admits a little reluctantly. Pixel knew more about him than any of the others, not just physically, as she had access to his operating systems, but mentally as well. Maybe that was why they realized they weren't as compatible as they first thought. Either way, Pixel was a good friend to him. Is there anything I can do to help? She offers. No, he starts to dismiss the idea, as he had before. There wasn't any time to waste focusing on what was wrong with him when Jay needed their help. But, as an AI, Pixel could be in multiple places at once, and every computer added to her network would only improve her abilities. There wasn't any harm in at least telling her what was going on. Maybe she would help his brother and Ronan in their search while helping him with trying to figure out how to help Jay. Actually, you might be able to. So he spent the next hour detailing everything that had happened while she had been busy, expanding on what he'd managed to tell her between updates. With her added to their arsenal once more, Zane was certain that things would go a lot faster. That is quite the predicament, she says worriedly once he finished explaining. I will begin searching for information on Soulstones and do my best to track Alphonse's movements via security cameras as best I can. Thank you, Pixel, Zane says, gratefully. If he were being honest, just telling her had made him feel a little bit better. But knowing she was working on this, on everything, as well made him feel better. Do not thank me just yet, Pixel says with a soft smile. I cannot efficiently coordinate my efforts with Ronan and Echo until one of them downloads the app to their phones. I understand not being able to contact Ronan, but can't you link to Echo directly, like me? Zane asks, curiously. There are many Nindroids connected to the system, but I am afraid that Echo is not one of them. She shakes her head softly on the monitor. I do not believe he was made with the ability to link up to the network, just as you were not originally made with that capability either. I see. Zane being able to communicate wirelessly with Borg Inc. Tech at first had been a fluke. The frequencies that he used to communicate with Falk just so happened to overlap with the one they used for things like, say, the universal remote they sold. After he was rebuilt, the function had been intentionally added and improved upon. Echo, however, might not have even that basic ability despite being based off of the same blueprints. As far as Zane was aware, he'd never communicated wirelessly with Ty D. The two would have verbal communication where a series of beeps would be exchanged, but that was it. We do not have time to buy Echo his own phone just yet. If it turns out he cannot communicate wirelessly with you as I do, I will lend him my phone. Zane had expected that to be it, and he was staring back to look over the materials he had once more despite being able to recall them all perfectly. The perks of being a Nindroid, while Pixel spoke up once more. There is one other thing. She seemed grim as she spoke. There was a breach at the secret facility housing the golden armor. It was stolen roughly 3 days ago. Vipere? There wasn't any point in asking just who had taken it, nor why it had taken so long for Pixel to find out. In order to keep it as secret as possible, the communications between the secret bases were limited. Still, he had released a lot of prisoners from a high-security prison, so there was a slight chance it was someone else. Yes, Pixel confirms. He was not alone. She hesitates, and the Nindroid finds his curiosity pique. Not much made Pixel hesitate. What is it? Vipere was hurt in the battle. It wasn't Zane's imagination that the temperature of the room dropped. From my simulations of the battle, the wound was not fatal, and he did not seem overly worried about it. It took the titanium Nindroid a while before he felt in control enough to answer. I'm going to go tell the others the news. His legs felt stiff as he moves to leave. Zane, Pixel calls softly. He pauses, glancing back over his shoulder to show she had his attention. For a moment, she didn't say anything, and then... Why were you so interested in me when we first met? The question catches him off guard, but the answer comes easily enough. Because I thought we were compatible. She stares at him, and he gets the feeling like she's looking right through him. The thought is ridiculous. If she were accessing his systems, he'd know, and Jay and Nia were far too proud of their inventions to install any kind of X-ray without telling them about it. Just because two things are the same does not mean they are compatible, Zane. He turns to face her fully at this, confusion making his eyebrows pinch. Easily reading him, she goes on. You were interested in me because I was like you, an android. I was interested in you because you had no directive, no rules that seemed to guide your actions aside from the ones you chose. You believe our relationship was superficial? Perhaps. She takes a moment to think over her next words. Or perhaps it was the most human thing either of us had experienced at the time. I don't understand. Desire, she says, simply. Zane still isn't sure he follows her thoughts. A part of him wants to ask if she chose to stay an AI over having a form because of him, just like before when she first told him her idea. It was odd. He didn't have any hard feelings over their breakup. They both had agreed they didn't feel anything more than friendship, and that was that. If she had felt any animosity towards him, or had any hurt feelings, he had thought she would have shared them with him then. Unless she didn't want to risk saying anything until after her transfer. The thought brought out a spike of pain in his chest. That she'd worry about his reaction enough to only say something after she was distanced from him. Or was it the fact that we were too close that made it so hard? Zane tries to find the right words to say. I am sorry if I did anything that hurt you. We are not the same, she says, softly. No hate nor sadness in her voice. And that doesn't make two things compatible, either. When I realized I didn't say anything right away, a part of me thought I had to be a part of you to maintain that freedom I desired when we first met. The Master Vice stays silent, unsure of how to proceed, but Pixel isn't done just yet. I do not regret our relationship. I would not be who I am now without it. But it is time we both open our eyes to the world around us and realize what else there is out there. Oh, the titanium Nindroid thought suddenly. Is there someone else she is interested in? That would explain everything. Why she wanted to transfer the strange conversation now. After what they'd seen happen between Cole, Nia, and Jay, he could understand her worry about some kind of fallout. I understand. He gives her a kind smile. I am perfectly fine with that. She purses her lips, looking unconvinced, before sighing and nodding. You were going to tell the others the news? Ah, yes. His mood dropped once more at the reminder. I will see you in a bit. She doesn't wave him out. Her picture just disappears from the monitor. He couldn't help but feel like he'd made some mistake in their conversation, but no matter how he goes over it, he couldn't figure out what it could be. Those thoughts were pushed to the back of his mind when he and the others had to deal with a raging Kai who, after hearing the news, had decided they needed to launch some kind of attack on Viperi's forces despite not having any idea where they could be. Jay did his best to calm himself as Hykos was preparing to actually sleep. Like, How long could one person actually stay awake and still be a functioning person? Jay knew his own limit was something like a day and a half. He'd cycle through feeling giddy, to sluggish, to outright crabby, and then he'd realize he needed sleep. Sometimes he'd push past that, but his dad was clear about not using dangerous tools on little amounts of sleep. Of course, staying up wasn't always something he did voluntarily. Focus, Jay, he admonishes himself. He hated when his mind wandered like this during something important. Heiko's was finally going to sleep after 3 days of apparently not needing a wink of it, all because they'd be arriving at the Dark Island soon. Maybe he wants his beauty rest before he goes and confronts whoever it is that he's trying to persuade? Not that he had any idea how soon afterward they'd be able to go see this person. If they were back on Ninjago, then it'd be another 4-day trip, maybe longer depending on whether the weather wanted to be friendly again, before they got back. Seriously, Jay, you have to focus. The others aren't around to keep you on task like before. He admonishes himself out loud and then cringes, expecting his remark to disturb Heiko's in some manner. He only breathes a sigh of relief when Heiko's doesn't even stir. The other must be sound asleep now. The only good thing about being a ghost in your own body, Jay thinks as he very carefully tests out the boundaries of the other's control. You never get tired. Or, at least, not enough to fall asleep. He'd been worried at first that he might be sucked into Heiko's dreams or something, but mercifully that didn't appear to be the case. Settling back into control of his body is like all his limbs waking up from falling asleep. There's a fading sense of numbness along with a lot of tingling. He blinks his eyes open, slowly, flexes his fingers and toes, and takes a deep breath before he moves to sit up. Heiko's didn't appear to be disturbed by Jay's actions, which was good. If his taking control had woken the other, he'd have to brainstorm some other means of regaining control. Of course, he whispers aloud to himself, feeling both elated at hearing his own voice without the strange echo, and anxious that any second now he'd lose control once more. I don't have much idea what to do now. He had tried to figure out a plan, but the ones he thought up always ended up seeming less than stellar. Grabbing a lifeboat and abandoning ship seemed like a good idea at first, especially since it'd isolate him from Heiko's underlings, but Jay wasn't a master sailor. He couldn't navigate by the stars, not well enough to make it back to Ninjago now, at least, and then there was the issue of food. The lifeboat might have enough for a day or two, maybe a week if he were lucky. But if he ended up lost at sea, he'd probably die. Not bothering to put on shoes, he softly pads his way to the door and pauses to listen at the hallway. There was the ambient sound of the sea that had surrounded them from the moment they started this boring journey. The rumble and tingling of electricity in the air that Jay knew accompanied a storm brewing. And the creaking of the ship. But it seemed most of the crew had gone to sleep as usual. Good, Jay sighs out, softly. Best be cautious, though. A little radiant chill in his chest of agreement told him all he needed about what the snowflake thought. Quietly opening the door, Jay slips out into the hall and glances both ways. He'd paid careful attention when Heiko's would walk these halls, and he was used to living in the Bounty, so the inside of a ship was a familiar one to him. Navigating wouldn't be that difficult, I hope. Two pulses of cold that he thinks was supposed to be the snowflake's attempt at reassurance countered the thought. Yeah, he whispers, and begins his way down the hall. It almost makes him think of the horror movies his friends would make him watch with them. The mounting tension as the main character slowly moves down the hallway. The monster or killer that could be just around the corner, or hiding in one of the rooms. Like this isn't nerve-wracking enough, he whispers with a hiss. You don't have to go and equate it to a horror movie. A sharp spike of cold and admonishment to focus, and he's back to creeping down the hallway. Besides, he can't help but think. When you are the monster, it's a little hard to be jump-scared. My lord, Kryptor proved the Master of Lightning wrong by provoking a terrible shriek from him. Of course, this did nothing to assuage the other's obvious worry. Is everything all right? I thought you were going to rest. Fine, Jay says hurriedly, then mentally berates himself. Of course he'd summon someone by thinking those thoughts. He should know better. And now he'd have to pretend to be Heiko's. I just, changed my mind. Real smooth, Jay. He can almost hear Cole in his head, can imagine him shaking his head in disappointment. I see, Kryptor says slowly. Do you require my assistance with anything? Jay hesitates and then realizes that this was actually a good turn of events. Yes, I want to use the Ultra Weapon. Heiko's had locked it up shortly after they'd gotten on the boat, claiming it was too powerful to just leave sitting around when they had no need of it. He'd kept one key that was around Jay's neck right now, but there were two in total, and the Nindroid just so happened to have the other. Of course, the Nindroid says deferentially. Rather than just hand over the key, as Jay was hoping, the Nindroid turns and begins heading for the safe where it was kept. If you do not mind me asking, my lord, what do you intend to use it for? That was a good question. Well, Jay hesitates. He could try and use it to get his own body back. If it were anything like the Mega Weapon, it'd be able to do that, right? Actually, Heiko's had said it was more powerful than that. Their time travel shenanigans had doubled the amount of dragon's gold, as he'd called it, which meant it had twice the power the Mega Weapon did. Strong as the Mega Weapon was, Jay could barely imagine something more powerful. That's for me to know. Kryptor stops walking, and Jay has to swallow the sudden bout of anxiety that rises. Had he not done a good job pretending to be Heiko's? Of course you didn't, he scolds himself. Heiko's wouldn't hesitate. The Nindroid turns to him, meets his eyes, and then bows. Excuse my insolence. Jay can only stare in shock at the Nindroid for a while, and then it becomes clear he has no intention of moving until Jay does something. You're forgiven? Thank you, my lord. Kryptor straightens and begins to walk again, leaving Jay to numbly follow along. How did that work? He thinks incredulously. Does he really think I'm Heiko's? Jay knew he wasn't a great actor. Sure, he was good at hiding his feelings, at lying about himself, but he wasn't good at pretending to be other people. He hadn't even managed to change himself to fit what Nia wanted. Don't go there. He bites the inside of his cheek. There is a flash of cold disapproval that stops him before he can draw blood. He feels like laughing, but not out of something funny. Not something happy funny, at least. What happened? He couldn't help but think sadly. I felt so strong before. I was awesome. So what happened? I feel like I've almost landed back on square one. That's because, Jay freezes as Heiko's echoing voice sounds out of his head. You're shouldering this burden all by yourself now. It feels like arms move to wrap around his neck, like a hug from behind. But there isn't any warmth, and when Jay can force himself to look down, there aren't any arms there. Heiko's tisks at him. You understand so well, little blue Jay. There's a light chuckling accompanying his words. You're lightning, a brief flash of light in the dark, gone before anyone even knows you're here. Jay feels paralyzed, a prisoner in his own body. Heiko's isn't taking control back just yet. But somehow he's stopping every attempt of Jay's to move, to speak, to scream. Anxiety rises high and chokes him. Darkness creeps on the edges of his vision, and there's a panic sputtering of cold in his chest that almost makes him wonder if this is what dying feels like. Relax, Heiko's whispers, and the sound is so close in his mind that the other might as well be whispering in his ear. There's one thing that's always been here, and will always be here. Let it cradle you to wash away the burden that light brings. It almost sounds nice. The encroaching darkness seems so peaceful right now, dragging him down. Just a few minutes, he thinks, and the cold in his chest gets so intense it hurts. It hurts, and the pain brings his mind back into focus enough that he doesn't slip fully. He's no longer in control. The muted sensations are enough to tell him that, and he feels shaken to the core, but he's still here. Hmm, Heiko's hums. It isn't his normal, musical hum, or the one filled with cruel whimsy, but a truly curious one. Heiko's holds his hand out, pushes it against his chest until there's a strange feeling as fingers sink in. It's like he can feel his own hand touching his chest and... No! He cries, desperately as he can feel the little snowflake being pulled away. No! Stop it! Leave him alone! But Heiko's doesn't listen, and it feels like there's a gaping hole where the little snowflake has been torn from him. Jay gasps for breath. The pain so much more intense than anything he'd ever felt before. But all he can focus on is the cyan glow in his hand slowly crystallizing before his eyes. Now, how did that get there? Give him back, he says weakly. If he could cry, he thinks he would be right now. Hush now, Heiko says sweetly. A mockery of kindness. This doesn't belong to you. And the one it does belong to must be dying to have it back. He chuckles, but Jay doesn't understand what's so funny. He feels cold. Not the kind of cold that the little snowflake radiated. That felt kind. This was an empty sort of cold. Heiko's pockets the sliver of softly glowing stone, and Jay tries to focus on the feeling of cold it still gives off. It feels so much more passive now. Nothing like the snowflake he'd met before. Echo watches Ronan cross another name off the list with disappointment. Of course, finding the shards wasn't going to be easy, but they haven't found any more since their first finding, even with Nia's help. He didn't want to lose his brother. What is the next address? He asks without delay. It's getting kind of late, Nia says softly. I will not need to recharge for another 12 hours and 24 minutes, Echo says determinedly. I understand if you cannot maintain such a pace, but I do not intend to stop just yet. Yeah, well, we're dealing with people, Echo, the Master of Water says with mild agitation. They aren't going to be very friendly if you wake them up in the middle of the night. Nia has a point, Ronan adds. We can get back on the trail bright and early tomorrow. Echo hesitates, and then concedes with a small nod. He didn't understand people just yet, so he wouldn't make much progress on his own. Good, Nia says with a relieved sigh. My feet are killing me. Have you consulted a doctor about that? He asks, concerned. It's just a figure of speech, you talking toaster. I am not a toaster, he huffs. The other two laugh as they begin to make their way back to the bounty. Echo tried to join in, but he just didn't feel up to it, nor did he understand how they could be so jovial at such a time. Did they not care? But no, they certainly cared, both about his brother and Jay. So then why? Echo didn't understand. Maybe he would, someday, with his brother's help. And he was determined to make sure his brother would be around to help. With that, he decided he felt a little better. He wouldn't give up so easily, not when someone needed help. I promise I will fulfill my purpose, Father. Pixel can't help the little giggle that escapes her when Echo introduces himself to her. Hello, I am Echo Zane, but everyone calls me Echo because it is less confusing. It was adorable. Of course, she gave him her full acronym in return, so maybe she wasn't in a position to judge. He'd been politely curious, asking her questions about herself and her creator, about her past with her brother and whatever else seemed to come to mind. Eventually, they had to shift their focus back onto the task at hand. Quantum detangling wasn't something you could just do. Even after they figured out how to do it, it'd likely take resources they didn't have, ones that maybe her creator, Cyrus, did have. But Cyrus was still stuck in a soulstone coma. Until they figured out how to fix that, they couldn't ask for his help. Then again, he would probably understand if I authorized the use of his resources in this matter. He had helped the ninja before, even at a detriment to himself, and even going so far as to keep that fact to himself. Borg Inc. was still on shaky grounds after the Nindroid attacks. He needed all of his resources possible to build trust in the company and bring it back to what it once was. And that's why he cannot do anything more than keep it running as it has before his absence. Cyrus was her creator, her father, and he never held her back once she realized she was more than just a personal assistant. She wasn't going to turn around and destroy any hope of rebuilding his company, even if it would help the ninja. But I will do everything in my power to make up for it, she promised silently. Pixel might not be a ninja, her alliance might not align with their goals, but she was still their friend. And if it turns out to be a matter of the fate of the world, then I will do what I believe Cyrus would want and help them. The network pinged, bringing all the searches she was running to the forefront of her thoughts. There, on a live camera feed, was Alphonse. I have located Alphonse Walker, she announces over the ship's intercoms. Broken Circles by Kit Brightside. Chapter 30. Is your wound hurting you? That had been the words that had stalled on Kryptor's tongue late last night when his lord had paused on the way to retrieve the Ultra Weapon, seemingly stricken, and then his expression changed to one of simple curiosity. He'd bitten his tongue then, not wanting to incite his lord's anger any further. He'd already been forgiven for one mistake. He didn't want to have to risk not being forgiven for another. So he watched as his lord pushed his hand into his own chest like he was pushing his hand through honey, viscous but entirely malleable. Without leaving a single trace of a wound, he'd pulled his hand out with something small and glowing that quickly turned into a small stone. A brief moment of panic overtook his usually rational mind as his lord had thoughtfully said, "Now how did that get there?" As he could only think of one way it got there. That being the wound he'd sustained when retrieving the golden armor. Having something like that left behind in the wound could have been deadly. "Hush now," his lord had said, almost as if hearing his thoughts. And then, with a chuckle, he went on to say, "This doesn't belong to you, and the one it does belong to must be dying to have it back." That had thrown him off. He wasn't sure what that meant. Had his lord taken his lingering gaze on the stone as some sort of desire for it? Kryptor knew that the whisperings of the riffraff that could barely be called underlings were wrong. Vipere wasn't crazy. Of that, the Nindroid was sure. His lord had dropped the stone into his pocket and dismissed him with a simple wave of the hand. He had asked if the other was still interested in using the Ultra Weapon. It was obvious that the stone had changed that, and he didn't seem to think he needed any medical attention. Pushing it would have only resulted in angering him. That didn't mean he worried any less, of course, which was why he was now outside of his lord's room waiting for a response to his knock. He counted the seconds before another knock would be all right, and was just preparing to knock again when the door opens. "Do you need something?" "I came to check on your wound." "Oh, that," he says lightly. "It's already healed." "But it has only been 3 days. Surely that was enough time for such a wound to heal." "You underestimate me," his lord chuckles. Kryptor is about to bow and ask for forgiveness once more when the ship lurches violently, nearly throwing them both off balance. "That's odd." "What is it, my lord?" The Nindroid didn't like the look on the other's face. He seemed worried. "There's no time. We need to get the Ultra Weapon out." He begins to run down the hall, and without further question, Kryptor follows. The ship lurches once more, the sky overhead rumbles, and the rocking gets more violent. Garmadon paces the deck of the Bounty restlessly. It wasn't usual for him to pace like this, but his attempt to contact Misako had failed. That, in itself, wasn't actually unusual. There were times when there hadn't been anyone around to answer, or when the area they had made camp at was a dead zone. Garmadon was used to waiting for Misako to call him, but that never made it any easier. especially when it had been so long since he'd last seen her. He didn't want to burden the ninja with these worries, so he'd shared it with his brother, who had said he'd had his doubts about the mission Misako had taken on, that allowing her to go to the Dark Island by herself was foolish. He didn't understand that Misako couldn't be swayed when it came to these things, and that he hadn't just let her go on her own. She had a whole crew with her, and she was no novice when it came to ancient ruins. Not to mention the fact that she knew Spinjitzu as well. Of course, he told his younger brother all this in no uncertain terms. Wu had stood firm on his position, and they... well, they'd gotten into a bit of a fight. It seems we are always at odds with each other in one way or another, Garmadon thought bitterly. It had been naive of him to think that just because he was no longer under the influence of the Great Devourer's venom that things would change for the better. That he could be the husband, father, and older brother he couldn't be before this. But his son had had to grow up quickly in part because of him, losing out on the childhood that he should have had. His brother, despite having years to find another or to accept that Misako hadn't chosen him, was still in love with her. And his wife, Misako, he knew that she still harbored feelings for Wu. The reveal of his trickery, of his claiming Wu's letter as his own, had only made things between the two of them worse. If I hadn't changed the name on that letter, would she have chosen me? That thought, in one form or another, had probably crossed both of the brothers' minds at least once. Misako loved him. Of that, Garmadon was certain. In his weaker moments, he confessed his worries to her, and she had made it clear that she had no intention of leaving him. She had agreed to marry him for a reason, after all. But now he was uncertain as how to proceed. He knew that life was unpredictable, and he'd been fortunate to get as many chances as he did, so he didn't want to waste any time fighting over petty squabbles. Garmadon wasn't willing to admit he was wrong, though. Misako would have gone to the Dark Island no matter what he'd said to her, no matter what anyone would have said. Dad? Lloyd's voice cut through his thoughts and he stops to face the green ninja with a small smile. Yes, son? The Master of Energy studies his father's face for a moment, obviously unconvinced. Is something wrong? Lloyd is smart, something he'd inherited from his father, as well as stubborn. A trait he got from his mother. Garmadon was sure he wouldn't give up until he found out what was wrong, or at least got a satisfactory answer. It's just that I haven't managed to get any calls through to your mother for a while now. Garmadon holds back a sigh as he continues. Wu thinks that something may have gone wrong. She is currently investigating the Dark Island, right? Lloyd's frown very nearly mirrors his own. That place could be dangerous. Your mother knows how to defend herself. Yeah, but who knows what's on that island? Lloyd bites his lip, worry causing a crease between his brows. Maybe we should head over there and make sure she's all right? Or maybe he got his stubbornness from both of us. Garmadon can't help but sigh. Lloyd was right. Wu was right. The Dark Island was dangerous, even for highly trained ninja. Misako could fight, yes, but things could quickly get out of hand. What about Vipere? His question catches Lloyd off guard. We can't just leave Ninjago defenseless. He watches as his son thinks it over, glancing down at the mark on his hand that had left him benched until further notice. We don't all have to go, he eventually decides, looking up with determination. We could assemble a small group to go and make sure Mom's all right. I mean, we don't know for sure if anything's actually wrong. That's a good idea, Garmadon agrees. Why don't you tell the others while I go tell Wu? All right, Lloyd nods and turns to head back into the ship. Now, Garmadon thought with only a bit of trepidation, I have to go admit to my brother that I was wrong. Hopefully, he could manage that without losing too much face. You can count me in, Kai says as soon as Lloyd finishes explaining what he talked about with his dad. There was no way Kai was going to sit around here doing nothing and hoping for the best. All right, Lloyd says, happily. I know my dad and uncle are both going to want to go, so that's four people already. Four? Cole questions. Don't you mean three? No. Me, uncle, dad, and Kai. That's four. Lloyd, you can't go. The Master of Earth tries to say gently. Why not? Lloyd challenges. Do you really think you could sit back and do nothing if it turns out that something had happened? Cole gestures to his hand. Lloyd hesitates on answering, so Kai speaks up. He's right. He knew Lloyd wouldn't be happy to hear it. Don't forget what'll happen if you slip up. Fine, Lloyd submits with a sour face. So who else is going to go, then? I am going to stay and keep working on quantum detangling, Zane says. And I will stay to help brother, Echo pipes up. Not only are the pieces of Rex on Ninjago not the Dark Island, but I've also got a time-sensitive job running, Ronan says with a shrug. Kai didn't expect anything less from a self-serving criminal. I want to go. I really do. Cole runs his fingers through his hair, trying to hide his grimace. But there's a lot of water between here and the Dark Island. They all turn to Nia, the only one who hasn't spoken up just yet. She looks hesitant. I think I'm going to stay. What? Kai can't help but scoff. Why? What's so important that you have to stay? It's just... She cuts herself off, glances over to where Ronan and Echo are standing, and then back at her brother. You're right. There isn't anything I can tell you that's more important, so I'll go. Kai wasn't sure why she was hesitating, unless she wanted to spend more time with that criminal, in which case he was more determined to make sure she went with them. He didn't trust Ronan one bit, and he certainly didn't want his sister anywhere near him. Have you all figured out who's going? Sensei Wu asks as he and Sensei Garmadon enter the room. Kai and Nia, Lloyd answers, trying to keep the pout from his voice. Is that all? Sensei Wu asks, looking a bit surprised. Everyone else has reasons to stay. Lloyd can't help but glance down at his palm, the one with the symbol. I see. Sensei Wu strokes his beard as he thinks. Four people is not a lot. Perhaps we should call for some assistance. We could call Skylar, Kai says, before his mind can catch up with his mouth. I mean, she knows what's going on, so we wouldn't have to explain that much. Yep, he definitely played that one off well. There was no way the others would misconstrue his words. Yeah, I'm sure Kai's girlfriend would be willing to help. Cole shoots Kai a teasing smile, which is greeted with a glare. That should be enough, Wu agrees. Let's not waste any more time. There are preparations that need to be made. Yes, Sensei, the ninja all reply. Echo follows his brother and slips into the back seat of his car. The others had decided that it was best for those going to the Dark Island to take the bounty, since it was faster than any ship. Those who were staying would use their vehicles to travel, should they need to, and would be staying in one of Nia's secret hideouts. Of course, Echo didn't think it counted as a secret if everyone seemed to know about it, but maybe it was just a secret to everyone outside the group? Aside from Ronan, since they talked about it freely in front of him. They had everything they needed to keep researching. All the materials they were given had been packed away, along with some extra clothes and whatever else they may need. Echo looks down at the phone in his hand, the one that his brother was allowing him to borrow for the moment, and then carefully opened the app for Pixel. Hello, Echo. Pixel's face appears on the small screen with a warm smile. Hello, Pixel. He returns her greeting with his own smile. Do you require my assistance? No, he admits a little guiltily. I was just wondering about something. What were you wondering about? She doesn't seem bothered by his constant questions at all. I have access to a vast amount of information, so even if I do not know the answer, I can look it up. Well, your main AI is on the bounty. Will you still be able to talk if you're so far away? He liked talking to her, even if they had just met. She was nice and didn't make him feel like the questions he asked were weird or bothersome. I am not sure, she admits. There is a chance that the distance between the islands will be too far away for any communications. Oh, but it will be a long trip, even with the bounty, so we can talk until we reach that point. You would not mind? Not at all. She gives him a warm smile. You asked a lot of questions about me before, but I would like to know more about you. Of course, the bronze nindroid paused. He had never really explained himself to others before. Was there a specific place you were supposed to start? Well, the beginning would make sense. I was created by Dr. Julian. He created Zane as well, which is why we are brothers. They continue to talk like this for hours. He explains his life leading up to the ninja finding him, and then him having to find them. She would sometimes ask him questions about it, and most he had answers for, but there was one he did not. Why do you remember a future that no longer exists? That he didn't have any answer to. Broken Circles by Kit Brightside. Chapter 31. Lloyd stares down the mark on his hand bitterly. How was it that this always seemed to happen? Just when the stakes were at their highest, he'd become useless or get captured or possessed. And now this happened. He was completely able-bodied, but entirely useless to his team and his family unless he wanted to die right after whatever move he made. I was more useful when I was a kid. Lloyd clenches his fists at the thought. At least then I could help. It had been hard seeing his family and two of his friends off to go on a rescue mission without him. The temptation to stow away on board was hard to ignore. If he were a little younger, less mature, then he might have gone ahead and done it. But Lloyd knew that the others were right. There was no way he could just stand back and do nothing if things went wrong. So here he was, standing around Nia's secret base uselessly while everyone else was actually doing something that could help. Or doing whatever it was that Ronan does in his free time. Probably trying to make a quick buck. Or find the parts to his ship. Wait, was Rex a ship or an airplane? It wasn't shaped like a ship, but it wasn't exactly shaped like an airplane either. Is everything all right? Echo interrupts the Green Ninja's ponderings. Oh, yeah, everything's fine. Lloyd can barely keep the frustration out of his voice. Are you certain? Your expression just now did not seem to indicate happiness. Yes, I am, Lloyd snaps, and then immediately feels bad by the hurt look on the Nindroid's face. Sorry. Listen, I'm not happy, but I am fine. All right, Echo agrees, although he seems a little confused by the Green Ninja's words. I was sent to inform you that we were going to go talk to Alphonse Walker. Jay's uncle? Lloyd perks up a bit. Why didn't you say so sooner? Lloyd doesn't hear the Bronze Nindroid's response, or if he even responded, as he hurried over to the vehicles. He wasn't sure how much of a help he could be. Likely, he'd hang back while the Nindroid brothers asked most of the technical questions, but it beat sitting around here feeling sorry for himself. Water rushing out of his mouth is the first thing Jay becomes aware of as his mind seems to snap back into place. Then he's coughing, enough to cause his sides to become sore from the strain. He shifts, moves to push himself up, and then freezes. There's a feeling of sand between his fingers, and for the first time in his life, that sends a jolt of fear down his spine. He lost. He was back in that world of endless sand, and he was going to slowly lose himself again. Open your eyes, Heiko says admonishingly. Jay does as he says and opens his eyes to look at the sand that his fingers are slipping into. It's a bright white, with little variants of color now and then. Like someone ground down a stone into the tiniest pebbles and mixed them into the little white grains. Relief and confusion hits him all at once. Looking up, he sees what appears to be a jungle further inland, and now that he's paying attention, he can hear the ocean behind him. Every now and then, the waves reach high enough to brush his feet. What? Speaking causes him to cough again, although not as badly as before. What happened? There was a storm, Heiko says, almost flatly. It's almost disconcerting to hear him speak without any of the mischievous inflection he usually used. The ship wrecked. Oh, right, Jay says, absentmindedly. I remember feeling one approaching before. You did? Jay catches a hint of surprise from the other, which was odd. If Heiko's had access to all his powers, shouldn't he be able to feel the approaching storm? A thought suddenly struck Jay and he quickly checked his pocket. It's with mounting relief that he pulls out the small stone. The little snowflake was still here. Jay wasn't sure what he'd do if the snowflake had been lost, even if he couldn't communicate with it anymore. It'll be all right, he says, softly. He carefully places the stone back into his pocket, barely noticing the chill it radiates. His legs feel a little wobbly when he stands up. Getting a better look around, Jay notes the broken pieces of wood that have washed up on shore. Feeling better? Heiko's asks in a way that almost sounds genuinely kind. Barely, Jay scoffs. His throat feels a little sore, and boy is he thirsty now that he thinks about it, but there are more pressing matters at hand. We're on the Dark Island, aren't we? Considering that's where we were closer to of the two landmasses, that's a safe assumption, yes. Again, strangely flat considering the speaker. Almost normal. There's a chance we're not on the Dark Island? Jay wasn't sure which outcome was worse. No, Heiko says bluntly. There's nowhere else we could possibly be. How can you be so sure? The darkness here. Heiko trails off, and Jay gets the impression he's searching for the right words. There's too much of it to be anywhere else. Okay, Jay drawls a little skeptically. How do you know there's so much darkness here? I mean, it is a little dark, but that's just because it's early morning. Or getting later into the evening. We'll find out which in a few hours, and depending on which, it'll either be bright or super dark. You can't feel it? Now Heiko's surprise was undeniably there. Even though it's so active right now? Active? Jay isn't sure what the other is talking about, but it does make him wonder. Is that why you haven't taken back control just yet? There's a silence from the other for a while, and then, quietly, almost as if he never meant for Jay to hear, he says, I don't want to just yet. Jay isn't sure what that means, aside from having full reign of his own body for the time being, and he debates whether asking would only push the other to take control that much sooner. It's after what feels like the 15th dry swallow while he thinks it over that he decides to let go and focus on making sure he wasn't going to die out here. Step 1. Fresh water. Hey. This is the great opening line that Kai has been debating over for the last hour. The sight of Skylar leaning against the railing of the Bounty, backdropped by an endless expanse of sparkling water and a flaming sunset sky, had left him bereft of his usual wit. Hey, Skylar replies, trying to look at him as he moves to join her. Her smile is easy, the wind lightly ruffling her hair. Did you need something? He was staring. He had to say something, anything, otherwise he'd look like a creep, or a fool, or even a creepy fool. I just want to ask if you had any idea what was in the crate. Kai silently curses his mouth for going to the first thing that pops into his head, but he's in too deep to change topics now. I mean, what kind of tea is that heavy? Even tea leaves can weigh a lot in such huge amounts. Skylar shrugs, looking thoughtful. Although, I've never ordered a batch as big as that, since we don't stock more than a month's worth at a time. Yeah, is Kai's genius answer. Truly, no other man is such a master at conversation as he is. Yeah, she confirms. Then there's silence while Kai struggles to find the right words to keep the conversation going. Kai, the master of fire, nearly jumps out of his skin as his sister's voice interrupts his thoughts. And he has to take a second before he can turn to the doorway and look at his sister as if he were entirely nonchalant. The tea is ready. Of course. He sighs. Turning to Skylar, who's smirking at him for some reason, he smoothly excuses himself with a duty calls. Duty? She parrots with a quirked eyebrow. I didn't know your sensei was so serious about tea that it was mandatory. What? Wait, no. That isn't why I have to drink that awful excuse for tea. Kai hurriedly corrects the restaurant owner. Oh? Now both her eyebrows are up. And why would you have to drink a horrible excuse for tea? He hesitates, glancing over to his sister. It wasn't entirely his story to tell, since he didn't exactly remember what has been dubbed the future that never happened. Come on, Nia sighs, rolling her eyes. We can talk about it over tea, otherwise it'll get cold. Kai does his best not to let the disgust show on his face as they head into the dining area, where two cups of tea are already steaming away, along with a pitcher of water for Kai to try to wash away the taste of the tea afterwards. He'd have to thank her for that later. Would you like something to drink? Kai offers. I'll just take some water, thanks. All right. Kai moves to pour her a glass, but before he can, Nia has already manipulated some into the glass sitting nearby and shoves it forward with a curt, here. Thanks, Skylar says, taken aback. Kai gives his sister a questioning look, but she ignores him, picks up her cup, and says, technically, this all got its start in the future. I'm not sure if it counts as the future at this point, Kai says as he reluctantly picks up his own cup. The glare he gets from his sister is enough for him to know his input isn't wanted. He stays quiet as he can while she goes over the future that never happened, only piping up to say how ingenious he was to use his social media like that. Eventually, she gets to the part where he can actually contribute because he was there. He speaks up a lot more then, especially to mention just how annoying that forest spirit Hiroshi was. At this point, he's already grabbed himself another glass so he could pour himself a glass of water, and not long after, they finished explaining. Skylar is silent at first, and then she says, well, that's quite the revelation. Yeah, Kai agrees. It can be a little hard to wrap my head around sometimes. Especially the weird time travel stuff that happened, or whatever. I mean, I never really got to see the guy, so I don't really get the whole reality-bending bit. Kai knew he was rambling now, and he wasn't sure why, but he felt like he could trust Skylar. It's hard to imagine that it could be part of the reason our lives have been harder, but, like, with a guaranteed good ending. Kai, Nia says sternly, breaking Kai out of his thoughts. Breaking whatever spell had seemingly come over him, and bringing on a flush of embarrassment. It's all right, Skylar says, gently. I can understand. You thought you knew everything about the world, about yourself. But then you learn not only about a heritage you never knew you had, but also that's been subtly influencing you and your friends' lives. And even if this tea will fix that, there's a worry that you aren't strong enough, that the only reason you succeeded in the first place is because of that power, and now that you're without it, there's a chance you'll fail. Kai struck silent by Skylar's words. She'd managed to sum up feelings he hadn't been able to put into words all this time in just a few sentences. Yeah, he says softly. That's exactly it. It isn't exactly the same as your situation. Skylar looks thoughtful as she speaks. But I went through something similar after you all defeated my father. She takes a slow sip of her water, and then seems to steel herself for her next words. After I lost my powers, and my father, I was overwhelmed by everything. I had control of not only the Chen's Noodle House chain, but his underground cult as well. Well, I had an idea of what I wanted to do. Putting it into action was harder than I thought. Breaking up the cult was the hardest part, because I knew these people. Some of them had even babysat me when I was little. They weren't bad people, just misguided. I wanted to help them, as many of them as I could, so I just told them that I'd do my best to give them all jobs in the restaurant. Not all of them accepted, of course, and even for those who did agree, some of them just couldn't adjust to a normal life. On top of that, the brand had been hurt by my father's actions, and even without money going into the call and whatever else my dad wanted, the business was losing money. It got to the point that I ended up selling the island and auctioning off a lot of my father's things. I was so in over my head. Really? Kai's brows pinch. But why didn't you call? I mean, if there was anything I could have done. That's very kind of you. She cuts him off with a soft smile. But I needed to get things under control myself. Or that's what I kept telling myself. After everything my father had put you all through, it seemed wrong to ask anything more of you all. She lets out a self-deprecating chuckle. It got to the point that I started wondering if I'd lose everything and end up having to resort to being a muscle for hire just to get by. But Shen's is doing better than ever now, so you must have been able to turn things around. She'd even mentioned expanding the business. It is. It took a lot of work. I had to research business and restaurant management. Although I can't take all the credit. Some other owners gave me some advice, and Dareth actually went on television and talked about why he loved the puffy pot stickers, which helped to improve the restaurant's image, even if that wasn't his intention. She takes another sip of water. With all that, I was able to turn things around. So, as long as I keep working, I'll eventually be able to fix everything? Kai asks, a little skeptically. Feeling lost and afraid that you won't be able to fix things is normal. She fixes the Master of Fire with a hard stare. But you aren't alone in this. You have your friends, your sister, and your sensei. You don't have to do this alone. Right, he replies a little sheepishly. He knew that, the last bit at least, but, well, somehow it was nice to hear. Thanks. If you ever want to talk, Skylar rests a hand on his shoulder and gives him an encouraging smile. I'm here. Ahem. Sensei Wu clears his throat, catching the attention of everyone in the room. I suggest you all go to bed soon. We'll arrive in the early morning, so I don't want to hear any complaints about being tired. Yes, Sensei, Kaya and Nia say simultaneously.